With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Broadcasting globally and with a worldwide audience. Welcome to America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King. This is today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Happy Saturday to everyone out there in the world. Hopefully you all have had a great week. And let me just tell you something. I am so amped up because last night I was able to watch the debate between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. And let me tell you something. Herschel Walker came with all the goods. If you ask me, it was an absolute complete knockout. I could not be more proud of Herschel, especially after the way the media has tried to, you know, stereotype him and make him look to us. You've seen all of these videos and these ads run by the Democrats that are painting Herschel Walker as this illiterate, harmful, just ugly person, incapable of running his own life, let alone having a seat in the United States of America. But let me tell you something, he proved everybody wrong. And I just hope and pray to God that people's hearts and their minds are changed and we do the right thing to get this country on track. One of the things that I'll say that I respect about Herschel Walker, it was two things. One, Raphael Warnock was asked, if Joe Biden was to run again, would you support him? He completely ran all around the subject, refused to answer it. And then Herschel Walker was asked, if Trump decides to run again, would you support him? And Herschel Walker just straight up said yes. And I'll tell you something, you know, with everything that's going on in America, which is why we're right here this Saturday morning in America's Living Room, I'd rather take the guy that's honest and upfront, right? Just tell me what it is. You don't have to park me on Promise Street and Nothing Avenue, because that's exactly what we have here in America when it comes to the Democrat, right? We're just parked on Promise Street and Nothing Avenue. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And you can't even get a straight answer out of these people. Raphael Warnock did a wonderful job at exposing himself for who he really and truly is. And his excuse for evicting people off of church property, right? In the middle of a pandemic, some owing as less as $30, getting evicted by the pastor, having nowhere to go during COVID. His excuse was that Herschel Walker was trying to assassinate or destroy the King family name. And my godmother, who is a member of the King family, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was sitting there in the audience clutching her pearls. The nerve, okay, of this pastor who is preaching death from the pulpit, abortion up until the moment of birth for any reason on demand. You know, this is what I have to say about that. We've got a special guest in the back studio and I'm going to let her up in just a second, but hear me out. Like, who waits until 9 months to decide to have an abortion? I mean, who does that? Who goes through 9 months of pregnancy and then decide all of a sudden, I just want to abort the baby? Having an abortion does not stop you from giving birth. Like, I don't know when the light is going to click for some of these things that is just pure common sense, right? We can put away the science. We can put away the medical. We can put away all of this other stuff and just go back to common sense. Having an abortion does not stop you from giving birth. You still have to go through a birthing process. So for these people to want intentionally, for any reason, for babies to be born dead, if I was a woman, I would much rather give birth to life than to give birth to death, because you're still going to give birth either way it goes. But shout out to Raphael Warnock for making a complete fool of yourself and exposing yourself to America. Herschel Walker, you did an excellent job at redeeming yourself. If anybody asked me, it was an absolute, complete knockout. And the Herschel that they have tried to portray to us, we got to see the real Herschel last night. So welcome everybody to America's Living Room with your favorite hosts, Angela Stanton King. Today we have a very, very special show, an awesome, awesome lineup. You're not going to believe who we have on the show today, but one of our very first guests, I have had the honor, my publishing company, many of you who may not know my full story, you know that when I was released from prison back in 2005, I wanted to tell my story, and I told my story, and I ended up getting sued for $30 million and eventually winning that lawsuit. But in the process of that, I ended up starting my own publishing company. And today we've published hundreds of authors, and I'm also a three-time national bestseller myself, but I had the honor of publishing, well, our company, Stanton Publishing House, not me, I can't take the credit, had the honor of publishing this book for Martha Dodd Slippy. Now, it was a different genre to speak, but it was very, very interesting. And Dr. Alveda King actually wrote the foreword. The name of this book is called To Real Estate Agents and Brokers, Homicides and Other Things You Slept Through in Class. Now, what's interesting to me about this book, and I'm going to let the author tell you all about it, is it's something that none of us just think about on a day-to-day basis. And it's definitely one of those things that make you go, So Martha Dodd Slippy, thank you so much and welcome to the show this morning.
Thank you, Angela. It's wonderful being with y'all. I am up in Bluefield, West Virginia, near Bluefield University, which is in Bluefield, Virginia. And it is a gorgeous day up here, and I loved your opening remarks. You were spot on, and I just appreciate those words. But as for the book,
before you tell us about the book, Martha, just a second. You have a long history in real estate in that field. Can you just give us a little bit of your history and your background before we get into the book? Because I want people to know your level of wisdom when it comes to speaking on these topics.
I certainly will. I've been a broker and an agent for 28 years in North Carolina and Virginia, and have had a lot of outside opportunities. In fact, in 2010, I worked part-time with the Census Bureau. At that time is when I found out the number one cause of real estate agent death on the job is homicide. That alarmed me. And then I was in some classes with the FBI, with the good guys of the FBI, up in Richmond. And again, I ran across that statistic, and even the FBI knows. And I thought, you know, agents don't know this. We just don't. I guess we think everybody's honest and nobody's going to hurt us. Well, that's not the fact. So God kept weighing on my heart, you got to let them know. And so for years, I'm thinking about this. And in 2018, I started doing research. And I researched, found issues in Canada, in the Philippines, in England. So it's not just an American horror story. It is all over the world that agents are just absolutely out there and very vulnerable, absolutely vulnerable. The first story I ran across was in 1969, and it was the murder of Dorothy Miller. She was in Burlington, Iowa, and in 1969, 48-year-old Dorothy Miller lived in Burlington, Iowa, and was the only female real estate agent in the area at that time. On the evening of August 15th, Dorothy received a call from a man calling himself Robert Clark, who wanted to be shown a local house that was for sale. Since Dorothy didn't like showing houses alone late at night, she brought her husband Fred along. The couple met Clark, who claimed he was planning to move his family from Des Moines. The following morning, Clark phoned Dorothy again and asked if he could take photos of the property for his wife. Dorothy was not available that day, but she scheduled another appointment for August 18th. The two of them met that night and were seen entering the house together by neighbors. When Fred Miller, Dorothy's husband, woke the next morning, he realized that his wife hadn't come home and contacted the police. They traveled to the house and found Dorothy's body inside an upstairs closet. She'd been knocked out with a heavy object and tied up before being sexually assaulted and stabbed 22 times. Robert Clark was the obvious suspect, but police couldn't find any trace of him in town. It seemed very likely that Robert Clark was an alias and that he'd targeted Dorothy because she was the only female real estate agent around. Clark probably intended to murder her during their first meeting at the house on August 15th, but had to change his plan as Dorothy brought her husband along. Given the cold, calculated fashion in which he carried out his crime, authorities suspected that the mysterious Robert Clark might be a serial killer, but he's never been identified. And even to this day, he has not been identified. So I can only wonder how many agents who were so vulnerable, who did not do their due diligence in finding out about Robert prior to showing the property. And this is one thing I've discussed in the book. And this one is volume 1, third edition, that the foreword is by Reverend Dr. Alveda King, which I really appreciate her doing this, and she's just an amazing lady to me. There are other issues. One of the first agents I contacted was down in Mississippi, Dorothy Lanier, and she's in the first chapter under assaults. When I first read about Dorothy, it was online through a media. And when on each one of these stories, I've had to get copyright permission to put them in the book because these are from FBI files, DOJ files, newspaper articles, even from agents. But the newspaper articles, I had to get copyright. Well, at the very beginning of the first publication, it took me 19 months to get all of the facts, figures, and everything like that. Well, Dorothy Miller's story, and I'm sorry, Dottie Lanier's story came to me, and when I read it, I was just horrified. And it was only like four paragraphs. And it was written 3 days after her event, which was in 2006. When I read the article, I had to contact the publisher, and they said, certainly you may publish it. No problem, $2,500. Well, you're talking about a Southern girl who doesn't have hardly 2 cents to her name, and it's not that I don't have deep pockets. I had no pockets at all. And I thought, God, how am I going to ever get this book published? Because I don't have $2,500 for one story. So I went online. I first went to Twitter and tried to find Dorothy, and I found a lot of information about her, but she had gotten off of Twitter. And I thought, well, maybe she's dead. I don't know. So I went to Facebook and found her there, and I said, please call me. Well, she called me that night, and we talked for an hour. And the story I had read said she'd been shot 4 times. She had been shot 2 times, which was bad enough. And then they said she was on the porch. She was actually in the living room. And the other issue, this was a buyer who wanted to see the house, quote, again, because he had seen it before and couldn't get in touch with his agent. So Dottie had said she'd meet him
there. Let me stop you right there for 1 minute, because we've got to go to a break. But this is getting so interesting, because never do we ever think about the dangers that, you know, real estate agents or brokers, you know, face every single day showing these properties, especially if you are, you know, a woman. And well, I don't know, these days being a woman is defined greatly. So I don't know if that's the right way to explain that, but just imagine just being out on your job and being attacked.
Yeah.
But we are going, and men are being attacked as well. So just any person, but we are going to get more into this story, and we're going to get more into this book. Martha Dye Slippy, thank you for joining the show this morning. We're in America's Living Room live on TNT Radio. We'll be back right after the break.
Jesse Zerwell on TNT Radio.
I haven't experienced hyper-reality to this extent at any point in my life.
It's getting worse and worse in a sense. It's there's a number of distractions going on around us, of course, that point in the wrong direction. You know, they're telling us we should look in a certain direction whilst things are happening somewhere else. You know, in my analysis, in my view, everything really depends on what we call the debt market or the bond market, you know, and bond markets have become very fragile of recent. Obviously, the Bank of England, just a couple of days ago, it had to step in and basically go back to QE, quantitative easing, buying lots of bonds. It used to be the most boring thing ever. You know, just debt market or credit market, bond markets in general were very boring because nothing ever changed. All of a sudden, they've become very unstable. You know, they go up and down very quickly, very rapidly. And I think one sign that things are getting worse is always bond yields going up very rapidly.
Jesse Zerwell on today. News Talk, TNT Radio.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. Those 9 months were also 273 days of planning. What about your daughter's first costume party? It was out of this world. And let's not forget those barbecues you plan in detail for your family and your more vegetarian by the day best friends. Surprise party for your parents' golden anniversary? You get the golden planning. The same way you plan each detail for those moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make.
America's Living Room with just a dash of common sense. Angela Stanton King on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All righty, everyone. We are back in America's Living Room with your favorite host, Angela Stanton King. For those of you that don't know, yes, my initials are ASK, ask, and that's why I'm always just asking. Martha, let's get back to your book. So you're sharing stories of people. These are real life stories of everyday dangers that happen on the job for people that are involved in real estate and I guess brokering. Continue telling us more about your book.
Yes, back to Dottie Lanier, who is down in Biloxi, Mississippi. When she was shot twice, she ended up in the hospital for a long, long, long time. And people know we don't get insurance through our real estate. We have to do that independently if we're going to have any at all. But Dottie, they had lots of fundraisers for her. But when Dottie and I spoke, it was in 2019, I said, Dottie, out of all the stories I've read, what bothered you the most? Well, it happened in 2006, and she said, well, you know, they said I was 70 and I was only 67. So, you know, you got to have humor. Oh my goodness, you have to have humor. And she's a delightful lady. She just retired this past year at the age of 82. And I did go see her. I told her, I said, Dottie, once this book is completed, I'm bringing you one. Well, I met her at her, where she is an agent, and I got to talk to a lot of her coworkers. And in my mind, we're all coworkers because I can't sell all properties. I can't list all properties. And if I have somebody who wants to move to Biloxi, Mississippi, I can make a referral. And so that's why I feel we're all coworkers. Well, a lot of coworkers of Dottie's had never heard her story. So there, right there in that own agency, they don't realize the problems that can happen on the job. And so many articles, one in Texas, one in Arkansas, they said, this changed real estate forever. And I thought, no, it didn't, because I've never heard of these stories. It didn't change my way of doing things. So in the book, I've learned from a lot of agents. I've learned from a lot of different people, not just agents. In fact, the first chapter is on the assaults. The second chapter is on the homicides. The third chapter is on, we have different mortgage companies. We have attorneys. So it's about mortgages. It's about attorneys. And we've had attorneys who were murdered that were real estate attorneys. And they've not found out who killed the attorneys. And then on the fourth chapter, we have agent atrocities, things that agents should have known and didn't do right. So don't think just because they're a real estate agent or broker, they are the best for you, sadly. But it gives you a heads up of what some agents will and won't do. And then the fifth chapter kind of turned issues around a little bit, and I went with home inspectors. And I interviewed three, one from North Carolina, two from Virginia, to find out their issues. So it gives you an overview. That's in the first edition on volume one, and volume two we will include home assessors, appraisers. And I know one who carries a weapon, and he has a reason. So it gives you a lot of rhyme and reason as to what's going on in the industry. Our industry is made up of 60% women, 40% men, and there was a man up in Maryland who was shot in the back of the head because the 18-year-old wanted his car. So the rhyme and reasons are so variable. You think it's sexual, but it's not. It's just a meanness. It's a horrendous thing. But there are ways that agents can protect themselves. And the number one rule is know your client. I've never shown a property that I didn't have the client pre-qualified. And the way that you do that, the first answer that a client has to give me is, who is your loan officer? If they do not have a loan officer, then I recommend several for them to attack. But I always start with their bank. I say, do you have a bank? And if they do, I said, please get pre-qualified and have your loan officer send me a letter. So these are just basic steps, but if you don't know the basic steps, you don't know. And they're not issues that are taught in class.
They absolutely are not, because this is nothing that I'd ever even thought about or considered. And I mean, to bring to your point, my mother, God bless her soul, Joan Millen Loki, she actually was the first Black woman to own a real estate business in Buffalo, New York. So I grew up learning how to read good faith estimates and working in the office and filing paperwork and creating the checklist, the FHA checklist, checking off the checklist, you know, to make sure that loan documents were secure. And I never at once considered the danger my mother may have been in. But Martha, it was so great having you on the show today. We've got about 1 minute left. Please give people your website. Let them know where they can purchase a copy of your book.
Okay, I recommend that you can email me. You can call me. The website I do not have right in front of me, and it's relatively new. Angela, maybe you can help me out with that.
I believe it's martha.slippy.com. martha.slippy.com.
Okay.
Yeah, so you guys can find her and purchase a copy of the book at martha.slippy.com. Yeah. Martha, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'd love to have you back to share some more of those stories about what's going on out there in the real estate field. Guys, coming up next after Martha, we have Joe Rose joining us. Martha, go ahead. You've got about 15 seconds.
Okay. I do have stories from the Atlanta area also. So it's not just close by. It's all over the country.
All over the country, everybody. So, Martha Dodd Slippy. We're live on TNT Radio. After the break, we'll be joined by revolutionary Joe Rose.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Joe Biden's done it again, this time bizarrely claiming that his deceased son, who died from brain cancer, was actually killed in Iraq. Belarus's armed forces have been placed on high alert for terrorist attacks and have been ordered to respond swiftly to any threats from neighbouring states. And China has condemned Canada for sending a delegation of MPs to Taiwan and has demanded Ottawa immediately cut ties with the island.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
You're listening to America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King, lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to America's Living Room, everyone. And in the studio with me now, I have someone who is just so, so awesome. And I mean, what's so awesome about her story is I happen to personally know her, and I know her because she and I have stood on the front lines together, you know, fighting for freedom, you know, going up against these mandates. And one of the reasons why her story is so precious to me is because Joe Rose was a New York educator who was fired, okay? Fired by the state of New York because she didn't want to bow down to the vaccine mandates imposed by Joe Biden. This is a woman of color who lost her job, her livelihood. Just imagine going to college, all of these schools, paying all of this money to get a degree, to get a job, and then you lose your job because you refuse to bow down to a vaccine that we know didn't even stop you from catching COVID. And she has been a warrior ever since the first day that I met her. Everybody, welcome one of the New York freedom fighters to the show, Joe Rose. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Angela. Thank you so much for having me.
Joe, I'm so honored to be on the phone and in touch with you again, my friend. We've definitely got a lot to get caught up on, but I'm following you on Instagram, of course, and sharing all of your content and making sure that the world is aware of the work that you guys are up there doing, because you are still in New York on the ground fighting. But before we get into that, can you just tell the listeners, because this is global radio and I want the world to know a little bit about your history, your work in education, and what happened to lead you to be one of the leading freedom fighters on the grounds in New York City right now?
Mm-hmm. So basically, I started working for the Department of Education in the year 2018. I was previously working in the homeless shelter. And so I decided, you know what, I needed a change because working in the shelter system can be extremely stressful. And I was there for almost 6 years. So, you know, I went to the school system. I was very excited. It was a change. It was more of a positive change. And I love kids. So for me, it was like a great opportunity. And so when you start a school system, I started per diem. And then eventually I found a school that I actually liked. And I decided to stay in that particular school late 2018, right? So from there forward, everything was fine until then the lockdowns were initiated. And I was very vocal about it because from the very beginning, I thought that the lockdowns were government overreach. And I felt like we didn't have the full story. So I felt like it should have been left to the individuals, not to the government, to tell us to lock us up in our homes, because I felt like, okay, well, you're going to lock us up. Well, what about the small businesses? What about us, the people that actually want to go to work? What about the kids that have abusive family that I know that I work in the school with, or whatever the case might be? What about them? Now they had to be stuck at home, spending most of the time again with their abusive family when they had the school as a safety ground, right? So I started speaking out on Facebook. Many people called me a sociopath. They said I was crazy, that the government was just doing this for our health and safety. And I kept talking about it every day, nonstop. I had gone viral twice for speaking about political things regarding the Democrat Party, Trump, and things of that nature on Facebook. So then I created an Instagram, and I started protesting, going to Union Square here in the city. And then I took it to politicians' offices, and then I went to city council, and I started, you know, recruiting more people and more people, because I felt alone and I thought I was crazy, because I'm like, why is no one else in New York saying something about this? Because this is wrong. And like, I don't want to stay home. Like, I actually want to go to work. I want to travel. I want to live my life the best way possible. So from there forward, I met other people, and little by little, we just started recruiting people, but it was kind of hard because at first, you know, people have called me a white nationalist. I've been called a white supremacist because of my beliefs, and because I refused to bow down, to the point that I ended up, you know, getting arrested last year because I went to a restaurant. They showed me vaccine card, and they asked me to show them that. And I was like, well, I can't. And plus, Joe Biden did say that showing ID to vote was racist. So why should I have to show you my ID plus a vaccine card in order to be allowed to eat? Like, this is not the Jim Crow South. And so, yeah, I got arrested last year. And it has been a whole year, October 1st, 2021. No job. And we were not allowed to even apply for unemployment because they saw it as you don't have a legitimate reason. And so why you don't have a job is because you just defy the mandate. So therefore, you can't apply for unemployment.
That is so true. So talk to me about what you guys are doing now, because I know you and I were on the ground together for one of the biggest marches in history. I mean, we have been on the ground in New York. We've been on the ground in D.C. We've been on the ground in L.A., standing with the firefighters, with the police department. Not only that, our brother Tramiel, who was on the show last week with Progressive Action, attorney Curtis Sowell. I mean, just so many people that we can name who we've been in this fight with, the doctors that have been standing on the front line, Robert Malone and his wife, Dr. Richard Urso, Dr. Simone Gold, who was the firestorm to kick all of this off. Dr. Stella Emanuel has been one to also stand on the front lines. Dr. Carrie Madej, Dr. Peter McCullough. I mean, we could just keep going on and on. But you guys are still in New York fighting. What's, because, you know, we've seen reports from Joe Biden saying, hey, COVID is over. But what about the people that were impacted, you know, by these mandates? I remember when we came up there to march, and I think we went out to eat, and they took our money, but told us we couldn't even come inside and to sit down and eat inside of their restaurant, you know, but we could spend money. They would take our money for the food, but we couldn't sit down. Talk to me about what's going on in New York now. You personally have a video where you personally confronted Mayor, what's his name? Is it Adams? Up there in New York.
Adams.
Yeah, you personally confronted him. Talk to me about that personal confrontation and then tell us about what you guys are still fighting for, because you guys are still active. It's not over.
Right. So, yeah, I confronted Eric Adams before, once he was elected, before he was put in office, because he had his office in Borough Hall in Brooklyn. And I called him something because I just felt so disgusted that, mind you, I didn't vote for him because I don't vote Democrat, right? But I was so insulted at the fact that when he first started campaigning, he said, oh, no, he would not support the mandates, blah, blah, blah. As soon as he was getting close to be put in office and once he was declared the elected mayor, all of a sudden his tune changed and all of a sudden he's supporting the mandates. So I confronted him about it, which that confrontation got me his number. And then he took me to his Borough Hall office and myself and five other people, we were all people of color. And then he said that he was going to like give us a meeting with the city workers. So I was going to pick like five to like eight other people to come and join me for a meeting. Eric Adams decided that he was going to continue to ignore me. And then eventually, the last time that I had a proper conversation with him, if you could even call it a proper conversation, he said to me that he would not be sharing a room with unvaxxed people because the cases of Omicron were going up. This was last year, 2021. And so after that, he never met with me. Other workers confronted him as well. And he was very rude and dismissive, didn't even care or anything like that. So now we are still in the fight. Some of us still don't have our job. Many restaurants are now taking people in. But please keep in mind that most of the restaurants in New York City were discriminating against unvaxxed. I specifically had only certain businesses that I knew to go to because the owners knew who I was and they did not want to abide by the mandate. So we only had like literally like, I don't know, I would say 3 to 4 spots that I knew for sure that I could go in with no issue. No one was asking for anything. But for the most part, movie theaters, most of the restaurants here were discriminating against the vaccine, including like a pizzeria. I remember my last day of work with the school system. I went to a pizzeria that I've gone there since I was a child. Okay. As I was working in the Bronx, and I went and I ordered a pizza, and then I said, you know, I want to eat the pizza to stay. And they told me, no, you can't sit here because you have to be vaccinated. And I said, you have to be kidding me. So I ended up, I'm like, you know what? You can take your pizza. I'm going to walk away because I'm not going to give you my money. And so, you know, New York now is quote unquote open, but yet many people think, oh yeah, like Joe Biden say, oh yeah, the pandemic is not over. But many of us still do not have our jobs. So many people put in religious exemptions that were denied, medical exemptions that were denied. Like I told you, overall, we're not allowed to apply for unemployment. Some people, because of their contract, we're not even able to apply to other jobs. But most of the jobs here still have that they need someone that's vaccinated. So we still have those odds against us. And so what we're doing now, next week on the 25th, we have a huge rally again with the firefighters. And then it's going to lead to City Hall, which we're going to have like a huge concert. We're gonna have people speaking, and we're working also with some of the city council members, Vicky Palladino, who has been against the mandates and against everything from the very beginning. I met with her the other day at City Hall. We had a press conference, and she's introducing legislation that in another case that we have a state of emergency or for pandemic, that people will not be stripped away from their jobs due to whatever state of emergency, and that people will not be able to be forced to do medical things such as wearing a mask if they don't want to, and the PCR testing, and having to acknowledge that those procedures or those measures can cause mental health issues, especially, for example, the children with the mask. I worked with kids. Many of them did not want to wear masks, and masks are harmful, not just from a physiological level, but psychologically, because I worked with children that were nonverbal. So the best way to identify emotions on somebody is through this facial expression that by you putting on the mask, you're blocking the human-to-human connection. So we're working on that for now. And yeah, we're still going at it. There's Michael Caine for Teachers for Choice, who is going back and forth with the court still because of the religious exemption that he and others put in that were denied. So there's still pending cases. The firefighters also have a pending case. And that's why we have just been doing that, because many people are now thinking, oh yeah, it's over. Now on the train, after they had the signs that said, if you're disrespectful, if you don't wear a mask, now they say, oh, masks are optional, you do you, as if we're just supposed to forget the way the unvaxxed were discriminated against, as if, again, I'm going to say it, as if this was like the Jim Crow South. That's how I felt living in New York for the past years.
Wow. Everybody, we are live on now TNT Radio with Joe Rose, a leader in the movement. She's on the front line in New York City fighting for not only herself, but frontline workers and our children every single day. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a second with Joe Rose.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
We've got that Trump now. No, really, really. We've got him this time. He's subpoenaed.
From the ridiculous to the sublime, this clown show, Potemkin, Stalin-esque show trial, January 6th committee, has voted unanimously to subpoena President Donald Trump in advance of the midterm elections. So what? A, good luck getting that subpoena complied with before you're kicked out on your keister on January 2nd. B, a subpoena is simply an order to appear. There's going to be no committee before which he appears. Run by you, the real January 6th committee begins January 3rd. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Oh, yeah, that's the stuff. Oh, I haven't been through the car wash in ages. My gears are all clogged up and my wheels are as stiff as boards. Oh, and you could do with driving me a little more sensibly. All that revving actually increases CO2 emissions. Changing gears at lower revs can save you money too. And they say us cars don't care about the environment. Honestly, I don't know why I bother. Oh, yes! Oh, just there.
Are you thinking what your car's thinking? Find out how to drive down your emissions and fuel costs by up to £120 a year at tfl.gov.uk.
America's Living Room and a dash of common sense with Angela Stanton King. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Everybody, we are back now in the studio with Joe Rose. Joe Rose, you're on the front lines. You're up there in New York. You guys are still, you know, just you're fighting for freedom. Talk to me about some of the other people in this movement that are on the front lines standing with you to accomplish some of this work to get done. And then I also, well, before we get to that, let's go back to something you said before we went to the break. You were talking about being an educator, working with nonverbal children, how harmful the masks were. And I've always thought that my personal opinion was that the masks were somehow tied to human trafficking because there were just so many people coming through the border and so many children masked up. If we got so many missing children in America, how are you going to identify anybody if all of these children have on masks? That was my perception. But I hadn't gone to the part of children that are nonverbal and needing to be able to recognize, like you say, those facial expressions. And that's something that we learn in psychology. How much harm do you think COVID and all of this stuff has done? How much harm do you think COVID and all of this stuff has done to our children in school since these mandates took place?
Well, Angela, to be honest, like, for example, like when we were sent home remotely, there were so many children that had technical issues or whatever the case might be, which we're providing them with laptop and we assisted. Like if they had internet problems, we assisted with that as a school. However, the kids, there were some kids that were very depressed, some kids that didn't want to log in and do the homework, kids that inside the schools were active children, right? But because of the lockdowns, they're just like, I don't know, they just got super depressed, which I don't blame them because there's a difference between solitary confinement, right? And there's a reason why they do that in jail, in prison, right? They do that to basically drive the prisoner insane. And there's a difference if I want to be isolated because I just need time away from people. So when you're forcing humanity to do something that is unnatural, that they don't feel comfortable in doing, like forcing them to stay home, psychologically, that's going to cause so many issues because children were no longer socializing with other kids their age that were locked up at home just on a computer or a laptop or on their cell phone, whatever the case might be. So it's definitely going to have a huge major impact on their socializations, on their socialization skills. It's going to have a huge impact on psychologically, because being told to stay home, it was because, oh my God, there's a danger outside. The world is scary. You aren't safe if you go outside. You're going to die if you go outside and see someone else's face, right? And so being taken away from your developmental stages, being taken away from like the things that you want to do, being around with your friends, going to prom, going to have fun, enjoying the years of your life is definitely going to be impactful. Because if you think about it, there has been a delay, right? In what were supposed to be normal years of their lives, years that it was supposed to be learning, socializing, developing, and going to the next stage. How is that going to work? So I feel like in the next few years to come, unfortunately, I feel like we're going to have issues with psychopathic and sociopathic behavior just because of the mask. The mask stops people having empathy. It also stops you from like breathing properly. So therefore, I don't know, I'm afraid, and I say this, that we're going to have a generation soon enough that's going to be devoid of empathy. And also, even though you didn't ask me about the adults, I feel like even with some adults, drug addiction went up. Alcohol addiction went up. Suicide rates went up amongst children, even as young as 9, and even adults as well. So I just feel like in the next year to come, we're going to have like an epidemic of drug use that's worse than the crack epidemic that we had years ago. And again, I feel like we're going to have, like I said already, sociopathic and psychopathic behavior because of the fact that the world was locked down. And I always tell people this, what was done to us is taken out of the cycles of abuse, and it's a way to break down a society mentally. So when you abuse a person, people end up depressed, low self-esteem, low socialization skills, and things of that nature, and all the problems that come from a person being mentally abused.
Wow, that's so true. So do you see a future? Are you going to go back into educating, or is your life now all about freedom fighting?
Well, to be honest, I tutor on the side just because I need money to get by. But I've lost everything. And I personally tell people, like, I'm fighting the fight, but do I want to go back to a system that discarded me like I was trash? To a system that didn't care how I was going to survive, because had it not been for my parents, I would have been homeless. I had to move back in because I did have some savings, but not enough to continue to pay bills when I was not going to have my set income coming in. So for me personally, I would not go back to the school system. I still work with children. Like I said, I tutor, and I also work with an autistic child. And so For me, I don't see myself going back to the system. I could go work at a school where children are being homeschooled, because now many of the people in the movement are now removing their children because of the sexualization that has been going on inside the city schools here, with the propaganda with gender pronouns and pushing children to transition and things of that nature. So I work with things like that, but inside the school system, I would never go back. I won't judge anybody that feels like they have to go back, because financially speaking, I totally understand. Like, I know people that have ended up, I know this older Black lady that she ended up with her teenage son in a shelter because she lost her job in the Yankee Stadium. So I'm not judging anybody for wanting to go back. For me personally, out of self-respect and dignity, I, as much as I love working with children, I cannot go to a place, like I said already, that discarded me with like no worries of how I'm supposed to get by now, that I can't even apply for unemployment and things of that nature. And I've been left to like hustle and struggle, which I guess is giving me some kind of like mental strength and things of that nature, because I'm not going to quit. But however, it's been very difficult. And you know, I have debt that have racked up, and I'm not the only one in the movement that does. So no, I would not be going back to the school system. Absolutely not.
Wow, everybody, this is Joe Rose on the very front line in New York. And when I say the front line, I'm talking about the front line. Let's use this moment to talk about some of the people that are fighting with you up in New York that we may not have mentioned that also get overlooked. Let's talk about that, because a friend of ours, her and her daughter were actually kicked out of, was it the museum? Because they didn't have a slave card. Talk to us about that.
Correct. So yeah, so Jayla, she's now 10 years old, and her mother is Maria, who has been with us already for a while. Jayla is a very intelligent young lady, very well-spoken, extremely intelligent. She's homeschooled, but Jayla and her mother, with other people, decided to go to the Museum of National History here in the city, and they were kicked out. NYPD came in, her mother was arrested. Jayla left also with the police because of the fact that they did not have a vaccination card. So Jayla right now, you know, she's, like I said, she's being homeschooled. She wishes that things will go back fully to normal, because remember, she's a child. And so her mother, Maria, had also been impacted. Maria was working at a hospital and she was sent home, but then I guess they needed her. And then they had to ask her to come back into work. But however, they had her working isolated. And I believe she's still working isolated away from her other colleagues just because of the fact that she's unvaxxed. Now, imagine if you go to a job and you're Black and they tell you, oh, no, you can't work here with us white people, so we had to put you in a room by yourself because you're contagious and within you're dirty. So that's what's been happening with Maria. I still keep in contact with them. I still see them. I still being around them and stuff. And there's other people as well. There's other teachers. There are firefighters. There's NYPD officers. There's people that worked for sanitation and other jobs that were just removed from there. And like, I had people still like asking me for help and assistance. And it breaks my heart because I'm like, there's already so much that I can do, you know, because unfortunately I lost my job as well. So it's been a very tough fight. It has been with people of colors and backgrounds. And I would like to remind people that the most vaccine hesitant group here was Black and brown people. However, the Democrats, Eric Adams, Bill de Blasio, who was the previous mayor, and Joe Biden, and Kathy Hochul, who's our governor now, they certainly do not care about us, okay? They claim that they're the party for us, but they certainly do not care about all the pain and the fact that they literally forced most Black and brown people to be discriminated against here in the city.
That is so true. And they claim that they care all about us, and they really, really don't. And that's why I have to say, I appreciate the work that you guys are doing up there on the grounds. And I hadn't heard from you guys. Another one of our friends that's up there is Jimmy Levy. I've got to get Jimmy on the show. Jimmy is just absolutely awesome. Jimmy is a musical legend. Isn't he supposed to be joining you guys shortly?
Yeah, so he's coming next week for the protest that we're doing with the firefighters, and then we're throwing like a concert and people are going to speak. So yes, he will be here in City Hall next week.
Next week, Jimmy Levy. Tell our friends up there I'm looking for my invite now. Where is my invite? You know I love to stand on the front lines with you guys and also just cover what you guys are doing.
Oh, I'm going to hit up the person that's like organizing, reaching out to people. That's true. I totally should have included you in there.
Right. Tell them don't leave me out. We've got about another minute before we go to break and bring on our next guest. But Joe, I want you to talk to us a little bit about, you know, what's next for you and how people can find you, because you too have come up under the attack of censorship. Talk to us about what you have next and where people can find you.
Okay, so yes, I had my page that was JOSpeakstruth_, but unfortunately my account was taken down with like 22,000 followers like 4 to 5 months ago. So now I am still on Instagram, JOSaidItFirst_. And then we also have the page New York Freedom Rally on Instagram. And then I'm also on Twitter by JOSpeakstruth_. And, you know, for me, the next step is to continue to file along the city council members that are supporting us, that are introducing legislature to stop these people from, again, firing people if a situation like this should happen again. And also, I just been trying to see and help out with like homeschooling pods that we have here set up. I'm going to have a meeting coming up in like 2 weeks or so with someone. And we're just here continuing the fight. And I don't know, like whatever God has in store for me, we take it day by day, because every day they're throwing something new at us. And right now we're just also working getting people back their jobs. Personally, I don't want to go back to mine, but there's people that do need their jobs back. And that's what we're focusing on right now.